Hi, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It's Tuesday, November 15th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. I'm joined today by political writer Tal Schneider and diplomatic correspondent Laser Berman. Hello to you both. Good morning.
Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
So we're going to talk about the 25th Knesset being sworn in today, as well as the ongoing coalition negotiations and whether ambassadors to Israel will meet with far-right politician Itamar Ben-Gvir. Russia's Kremlin has weighed in on Netanyahu's win, and we'll also talk about what happened at the UN yesterday. We'll get into all of that right after the break.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Okay, Tal, let's get started with you. The 25th Knesset is being sworn in today, but not the 37th government, Netanyahu's new government, because coalition agreements have yet to be concluded and finalized. What can you tell us? What are your expectations?
Right, Jessica. So the negotiation between the parties, mainly between the Likud and the rest of the parties that are supposed to build this new coalition, were put on hold about 48 hours ago, and they're not yet to be resumed. Netanyahu originally expected to swearing the government very fast. He wanted to do it actually today, at the same day of the swearing in of the Knesset. But it didn't work. There is what we call a fight at the top. Smotrich, this senior partner for this new government, coming from the religious Zionist party, you know, he wants to be either a finance minister or defense minister. Those two jobs Netanyahu wishes to give to someone else. Specifically, he wants the defense minister to come from his own party, whereas he probably agrees to grant Derry, his other top partner, the head of Shas, the finance ministry. So as long as they cannot decide on the division of these important taps, you know, important jobs, top ministers are, you know, foreign affairs, defense, and finance. So Smotrich actually did a year of and 4 months of service when he was at the age of 28. That's very, very late. Usually soldiers do it at the age of 18. It is shorter than mandatory military service for regular regular soldiers, and it's also a bit shorter than the usual Hesder army service for religious men. So this is what he did as a military service. It was not in a combative role. On the other hand, when we talk about Derry, the chair of Shas, for being finance minister, let me just remind our listeners that Derry was convicted in two charges, one, you know, dated back, many years ago, but the other one, just less than 12 months, he was convicted in tax evasion. He was convicted in a plea bargain upon his admission. And back at the time, he promised to not go back into the public life and touch public money. And now he's slated to be finance minister. So we are expecting a slew of appeal to the high court to block that. There was some talk last night about Derry becoming the defense minister, which is also a surprising and yet another unbelievable maneuvering, because Derry served 3 weeks in the military. Again, some sort of an arrangement that allowed him to just be, you know, he entered the public life at a very early age before he was 26 at the time. So he did like this kind of, it's not really a military service, and he is representing a party in which they encourage young people of Israel to go study in yeshivas and not serve in the military. Many of them are exempt by the country, but there is also military, mandatory service, and they avoid it. So under all of those arrangements. So it's kind of weird to have someone who has no military background encourage young people to study and not to serve to become the defense minister.
Tal, what could happen here if Smotrich doesn't get what he wants? And Derry doesn't get what he wants. You know, we keep on saying how this coalition in many ways is very stable. But in reality, if they don't get the ministerial appointments that they want, what could end up happening?
I think for now, I can only say that the most interesting thing that can happen is that they will stretch the negotiation for 28 days. The counting of the 28 days started this Sunday, so 2 days ago. So it can go on for 3.5 weeks as of now. This is, probably the, I would say, worst case scenario for them. If you're looking for an answer of building a coalition with Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid, I think that's not the case. If you're looking for an answer of a new election, that's not the case as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They will find a solution, I suppose.
Right, some kind of solution. All right. Thanks for that explanation. Laser, Russia's Kremlin welcomed Netanyahu back to office. Seemed like very open arms, obviously not in person yet. What does that say? Explain it to us, please.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of anticipation whether Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin, Russia's president, will have a phone call. I assume they will at some point. And then the question is, what will the return of Netanyahu mean for Russian-Israel relations? I remind the listeners that for Netanyahu's previous 12 years, this was before the Russian invasion, Netanyahu was probably the Western leader with the warmest personal relations with Vladimir Putin. And Israel has certainly embraced that role as certainly a Western country, but one that is not anti-Russian, one that is able to maintain perhaps uniquely open channels of access both in Washington and Moscow. Under the Lapid-Bennett government, we know that Israel tried to walk this awkward tightrope in which they publicly made statements supporting Ukraine and sought to show that they were in the Western camp, but also wanted to maintain its ties with Russia, especially around military coordination in Syrian skies. Now, it seems like the Russians are hopeful about the relationship that it will get better with Israel under Netanyahu. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said in response to a question that Russia values its constructive relations with our Israeli partners. And they said it's important for us to see people at the helm who share a common approach to further developing bilateral relations. So they certainly are taking the public stance that they're open to the relationship getting better. Let us also not forget that the relationship with Ukraine has taken a surprising downturn this week, with Ukraine's vote against Israel at the UN, in that Friday vote calling on the International Court of Justice in The Hague to issue a ruling on the Israel's occupation of the West Bank. So Israel is certainly piqued about that. There are reports this morning, and after this podcast, I need to speak to Ukraine's ambassador about Ukraine's ambassador to Israel being summoned by the foreign ministry over that vote. So this comes at a time when Kyiv-Jerusalem relations are taking a surprising downturn. I don't think it will be a permanent problem, but there's certainly tensions rocking the boat right now, and Russia is fully aware of that.
And we'll talk a little bit later in the podcast about what happened in the UN yesterday. We're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, we'll talk about Itamar Ben-Gvir.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel's Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. Tal, so we have Itamar Ben-Gvir saying that he has been meeting foreign diplomats in order to improve his international image, but no one else is claiming to have had such meetings. What do you make of all of this?
Right. So, when the negotiation started, Israel's president, Herzog, apparently said to Itamar Ben-Gvir, the chairperson of Jewish Power, that in order to establish credentials and, kind of a stand among a worldwide audience, he should start just, doing rounds. Why won't you start to talk to people and explain to them your senses so people will not be afraid of you? That was, some sort of the content of this discussion with the president. We know that because the president was caught on open mic during the negotiation, and then Ben-Gvir himself issued a statement saying, yes, following the president's advice, I am now meeting foreign diplomats. So I've called diplomats, ambassadors, and other officials from Great Britain, Germany, India, Japan, Egypt, Australia, Greece. I called, bunch of them, really lots of foreign dignitaries who are stationed in Israel. Belgium also, yeah. None of them received any kind of overture from him. None of them received a phone call or anything on his behalf. And when I talked to this, diplomats, and I asked them, what will you do when you get the call? They said, all of them were very embarrassed and said, listen, it's very delicate. I can't tell you what we'll do. We'll have to get, instructions from our capitals. We don't know yet how to treat this. I actually sat yesterday with one of those diplomats and she said, we don't know what to do. We can't boycott the government, obviously, but we will have to take it step by step. I think everybody is looking probably to others to see what they're doing. But I have to tell you, one meeting was already held. Ben-Gvir managed to get a meeting with the former ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, who spends lots of time in Israel, as we all know. So he was happy and cheerful to meet with Itamar Ben-Gvir in offices in Jerusalem. Again, he's not the current diplomat. He's the former ambassador. I don't think Tom Nice is anywhere near close to even talking to Ben-Gvir on the phone at the moment. For people who don't understand why this is such a big hustle, Ben-Gvir was convicted 8 times in different incitements measures and in different incitements charges against Arabs and so on. He was known to be a bully who just, take out a gun in the middle of a market or in the middle of some kind of demonstrations. Just last week, he attended the annual commemoration of Mayor Kahana, during which he said he no longer think that he should expel all Arabs, but only some of them who are, terrorist supporters or such. But then he went on to Twitter to call to the expel of another Knesset member, Ahmed Tibi, just because he doesn't like Ahmed Tibi's ideas and concept. And he said, I will make sure that you will be expelled to Syria. This is just coming, a couple of days ago on Twitter. So this is the person, and he is going to be the next Homeland Security Minister of the State of Israel.
The U.S. is saying that they would not even necessarily offer him a visa to come to the U.S. given his previous action.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have to tell you, Itamar Ben-Gvir's former partner in Jewish Power is... So actually, it was not Jewish Power, it was under a different name, but they were partners in all of their political lives. Itamar Ben-Gvir is 46 or 47, so from the age of like 16 up until a year ago, his partner was former MK Michael Ben-Ari, and Michael Ben-Ari was actually banned from entering the United States because of his engagement and involvement in Kahana Kach terror organization. This is a group that is still listed under the State Department for World Terror Organization. It's not in the main list of the FTO, I think. It's a different list, but it's still listed. And Ben Ari was also outlawed by the Central Election Committee from running to the Knesset. So they ran together in 2019, just, you know, 2.5 years ago. And Ben Ari was banned, and not only him. Actually, all of the leaders of Jewish Power were banned outside of Ben-Gvir. He remained the only one to stay in. By the way, Itamar Ben-Gvir started his work at the Israeli Knesset as an assistant to that Ben Ari, going back like 20 years ago. So,
small world. Okay, thanks for that, Tal. And Laser, let's talk about what happened at the UN yesterday. Did Israel retaliate for Ukraine's vote against Israel at a committee on Friday? What's happening between Israel and Ukraine at the UN?
Yeah, so Israel was certainly very upset, as I mentioned, about Ukraine's support for that fourth committee measure calling that will move a vote to the General Assembly next month, which will ask the International Court of Justice to rule on whether Israel's occupation of the West Bank has become a permanent annexation, which would be a war crime. I'll just note that Ukraine has not voted with Israel, especially in the past. So it's not like, you know, Ukraine was a reliable pro-Israel vote at the UN. But with all of what Ukrainian leaders have said about why isn't Israel supporting us, you know, we have all these connections, historical, cultural, and values, you could see why Israel would be quite frustrated with this. Now, the question is, did Israel retaliate yesterday? It certainly seems like it. Okay, so there was a vote at the General Assembly creating a mechanism by which Russia, should they ever agree to, which they won't, would pay reparations to Ukraine. It seems like retaliation. Israel has not issued any explanation of this, but there are reports in Hebrew media that Israeli diplomats, not quoted by name, say that, no, the decision was taken ahead of time to vote against the, or to abstain on this. We don't want to create a precedent by which we can be called on to pay reparations to Palestinians. But that's what they're saying behind the scenes. This certainly feels like some sort of retaliation. It's important to note that Israel is the only Western country that did not vote in favor. Obviously, the Europe and North America are very much united in their opposition to Russia, and in international bodies, they certainly stress that. But it's also important to note that in the Middle East, most of the countries abstained. So Israel is standing out as a Western country, but is quite in line with some of its peace partners and countries like Saudi Arabia. So at this point, we don't know whether it was really, you know, retaliation, but it certainly feels like it.
Will there ever be any more clarity on that?
It continues to escalate between Israel and Ukraine. Today, as I said, the ambassador of Ukraine to Israel was summoned by the foreign ministry, and I'm going to talk to him about that in a couple of minutes. So this is not something that Israel wants to put to bed yet. You know, so what if they did indeed retaliate? I think the message has gotten across. We'll see whether there's further retaliation. At some point, I would expect both sides to you know, kind of tamp down on this. It doesn't serve anyone's interest. And I think when Bibi starts taking control of really takes control of Israel's diplomatic mechanisms, you know, he'll put his approach in as well, and which is probably going to be that this isn't serving anyone right now.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for that, Laser. And thank you, Tal, as well, for being with us on today's Daily Briefing.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow with another Daily Briefing. In the meantime, have a good day. Happy listening.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.